Welcome back here to X's and Bros on the Michigan Sports Network. Danica Halen, Ryan Elke, Anthony Bellino, all joining you. Joining us now covering the Detroit Pistons for Pistons.com, our good friend Keith Langlois. Keith, my friend. It's supposed to be a time where we'd get excited for the lottery. We'd talk about, you know, maybe some prospects, where the team has been, recap a little bit of the season. But unfortunately, we have some bad news that we need to get to first, and that is the unfortunate passing of Piston legend Bob Lanier. And Keith, first and foremost, thank you for taking the time to join us. How are you? How's life? How are things, my friend?
I'm doing well, Anthony. Good to be back with you.
It's great to have you, and you know, it's unfortunate that the topic that we are discussing, the one that's at the forefront, is Bob Lanier's passing at just the age of 73. Keith, this is one that I guess catches everybody by surprise, because you think 73, that it's really not that old.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Bob was on any short list of greatest players in Pistons history, he is right there, and I know. You know, he played at a time, his last game with the Pistons would have been, you know, what, more than 40 years ago now? So a lot of, there's a couple of generations of Pistons fans who only know him by, you know, maybe video clips or reading something occasionally about him. But Lanier was a great player whose greatness would have transcended any era. He was, you know, if Bob Lanier was coming up in today's game, he would have had a very easy time transitioning to be a, what they want in big men today, to be an inside outside player. He had just had, and he had an enormous body, but he had huge hands and very soft hands and a great shooting touch. And by, you know, I got to know Bob a little bit over the years, mostly in the Palace days when he'd come back, you know, as an ambassador to both the Pistons organization and in an official capacity with the NBA. And as I'm sure you have read exhaustively today, everybody who ever crossed paths with Bob said he was an even better human being, one of the most gentle souls you'll ever find. And that's really the reason David Stern made him a special assistant to him as an ambassador to travel the world to spread the gospel of basketball in the NBA.
Well, I love the way that you just said that, spread the gospel of basketball in the NBA, because that's maybe his calling was bigger than basketball, and what he meant to the association as far as, like you said, spreading the word and awareness about the league in a time that was much different, right? I mean, playing in an era where I think up for a lot of times we take for granted that I can immediately log on and read and watch clips, and that availability wasn't there for, you know, until recently. So to be able to have somebody out there, especially in the community, that's what the Milwaukee Bucks said in their statement, you know, playing such a big role in Milwaukee's community as well. It just, it seems like some people's lives are a little bit bigger than basketball. And for Bob, that may be, you know, maybe one of the great things that we can say positively about him in his passing, and that his calling was more than hoops.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Bob was, you know, he worked for the NBA's outreach program was called NBA Cares, and it was all about, you know, Bob took great joy in not just working with kids, but with kids who were maybe underprivileged, at-risk kids, and he spoke about that. He, you know, he was so, despite his size, which, you know, little kids could often find someone of that size intimidating, but he never seemed to. He just, I think, kids could sense that he really was just a genuine, authentic, good guy, and a you know, a kind soul, and he really, I think, took delight in meeting people of all walks of life, but especially kids who maybe needed a break in life.
You know, I thought it was interesting reading your article at Pistons.com, and you can do that too for our listeners out there. Go read Keith's piece, because there's a lot of great quotes in there, one of which from Special K, Gregory Kelser, who's on the Pistons broadcast with our friends over at Bally Sports Detroit, and just a really unstoppable player. And Kelser, you know, joked about, you know, the Pistons struggling in 79, and they're coming off a title, and they used to, you know, talk, maybe we could beat the Pistons. Then the question would always come back to who's going to guard Bob Lanier. What kind of player was, for people that are younger like myself, you know, you mentioned, you know, transitioning into today's game, what kind of player was Bob Lanier?
Well, he took St. Bonaventure, you know, a very small private Catholic school near where he grew up in Buffalo, New York, to the Final Four. And they might have, you know, even though that was the heyday of the UCLA dynasty, he didn't get a chance to win in the Final Four, because unfortunately he tore up his knee in the regional finals, and when St. Bonaventure beat Villanova, he collided with, ironically enough, a guy who would be his future teammate on the Pistons, Chris Ford, and just tore up his knee, something awful, at a time when that was, you know, in that era, that was a career killer for a lot of people, and especially for big men. You know, torn ligaments back then really were career killers. And somehow Lanier, this would have been in March of 1970, the Pistons made him the number one pick anyway, and he showed up and played all 82 games of his rookie season, you know, just which would have started maybe like 6 months after, 7 months after that knee injury. And he later said, you know, he felt a lot of pressure being the number one pick. That was at a time when the NBA and the ABA were really waging war for high profile college All-Americans. And he had options to go to the ABA, but he came to the Pistons and he felt a lot of pressure to perform. And, you know, he later admitted he probably should not have played that year. And then he went out and played all 82 games. But Lanier, as I said earlier, he was, despite his size and his enormous strength and his girth, he really had the feet of a ballet dancer and these huge soft hands, great touch around the rim. He had a hook shot, but he could go out in an era when big men did not do that. He could go out to 18, 20 feet and shoot. And I'm sure had there been a 3-point line then and the emphasis on making 3-point shots, he would have had no issue extending to the 3-point line. And then, you know, an even more remarkable player than he already was. I think Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, after his playing days were over, said the toughest guy for him was Bob Lanier, that Lanier was just, you know, even in an era of, in that era, basketball was built from the inside out. You know, a good 7-footer was the holy grail. Everyone wanted one of those. Offenses were built around those kinds of guys. And it was in an era when you had Hall of Famers, you know, starting with Kareem, Wes Unseld, Dave Collins, Nate Thurmond, I'm sure Willis Reed, I'm sure I'm missing a few. There weren't that many teams, you know, back then either. The NBA was like a 15, 16 team league for some of those years. So Lanier was going up against Hall of Fame guys more often than not, and being recognized by his peers as one of the very best. Despite the horrific knee injury, he played in 9 All-Star games, 8 of them while wearing a Pistons uniform. Still has the highest per game scoring average in Pistons history, I believe 22.7 or 22.9, something like that. Still was number 3 in Pistons all-time scoring behind a couple of Hall of Famers and Isaiah Thomas and Joe Dumars. He's number 3 in rebounds. He's number 8 in assists, which tells you what type of passer he was. And I think he's number 3 in block shots, despite the fact that for the first 3 years of his career, that wasn't even a statistic. And if it had been, and he'd averaged what he did when they started counting it, he'd still be the Pistons leader in block shots. So just a tremendous all-around player with a game that would have transcended eras and playing styles and everything else.
10 seasons with the Pistons, 5 with Milwaukee. His career totals averaged 20.1 points and 10.1 rebounds, along with 3.1 assists. And that is that's incredible when you look at the length of his career. By the way, Keith, because you said his era, what's your favorite decade of hoops? Do you have a preference? As today's game is so much different, if we're watching the NBA playoffs today, if we watch the Pistons throughout the course of the season, we can all see the way that the game has trended with the long ball revolution with Steph Curry and how that has impacted the game of basketball. But do you have a favorite decade? I know it's kind of a random question, but it just came into my head as you mentioned eras. And I was like, I wonder what Keith's favorite era is.
I think I'd have to say the 80s. It was, it was the era that I think the NBA, that was the era where the NBA really went from a mom and pop operation to big time professional sport, a big time commercial industry. But more than that, it was the era of just unbelievable rivalries and great stars ascending to places of prominence, led by Magic Johnson and Larry Bird. I know it's often talked about now, but Magic Johnson's rookie season, 79-80, coming off the national championship, also Larry Bird's rookie season. So those two guys who just played in the most watched NCAA championship game ever, and I believe that's still the case, the Michigan State-Indiana State game. And they went to the two most iconic franchises in the league, the Lakers and the Celtics, and revived them both instantly. Magic Johnson's rookie season, the Lakers beat Philadelphia in the NBA Finals on a Friday night, in which Magic plays center for an injured Kareem, and I think he had 42 points, 15 rebounds, and 9 assists or something like that, arguably the greatest game that I've ever seen. And that game was on tape delay on CBS, which tells you where the NBA was at the time. And obviously that is unthinkable now. Those games are in primetime on network TV, and they look for the best possible times to showcase those games. And that really traces to that era. You had, it started off with the Lakers and the Celtics, and then the Pistons coming up on the outside and first overtaking the Celtics, then overtaking the Lakers, all the while Michael Jordan comes to the league in Chicago, and he's, they're barking at the heels of the Pistons. So great, great dynasties in that era, great, great players, and really the decade where the game really grew up and spread its wings.
That would have been something. You know, I'm an '80s baby, but I was just too young. I didn't know. Yeah. I didn't know what was going on, Keith. Yeah, it's just throw me in front of the television. Maybe I'm rolling around. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know.
Your excuse. Anyone else? Anyone over the age of 10 is not excused for not recognizing how awesome that decade was.
I love it. Keith, as we look at this past year, a 23-59 overall record this year, obviously getting off to a little bit of a slow start with, Cade Cunningham not in the lineup, didn't really shoot it that well. They had the whole COVID issue where, they're juggling around rosters across the NBA, as they try to get prepared and, guys missing and in protocols and this, that, and the third. When you look at this season, do you believe that the Pistons took a step in the right direction this year? I know Sadiq Bey didn't necessarily shoot it as well. Maybe there were some higher expectations. Maybe I was a victim of that. I thought with the way that they closed out the 21 campaign that this year, hey, all those close losses, those are going to turn into wins, and this team could be competing for a 9 or 10 seed, maybe get a play-in game. Maybe I don't know. Maybe I was drinking a little too much Troy Weaver Kool-Aid there, and that's okay. I'm willing to admit that. But did you see last season as progression for this team?
Oh, I think in the bigger picture, I don't think there's any question about it. It starts with the fact that they found, they did the hardest thing to do in the NBA, find a guy to build a team around. They got Cade Cunningham, who, the thing that resonates most with me after watching him in a season that began with him kind of under the cloud of the injury that kept him out for all of preseason and the first, I think, five of the first, in his first four games, five of his first six, and really affected him for a good 2-3 weeks after that. But late in the season, goes into Brooklyn, falls on his backside in the first half, bruises a tailbone, is doubtful or questionable to return, comes back, scores 27 of his 34 points in the last 16 minutes of that game. And after the game, Brooklyn, and in post-game press conference, the Kevin Durant is seated next to Kyrie Irving, and unsolicited, he talks about how much he thinks of the Pistons' future. And he said, it starts, and he said, when you've got a 6'7 point guard who can wreck game plans, that's a pretty good start. So if you're asking the Pistons, did they make progress this year? Yeah, they made progress this year, if for no other reason, and there are other reasons, but if for no other reason, that they found a guy you can build a franchise around. And a guy that, I think is going to be a perennial all-star sooner rather than later. And perhaps, maybe someday in the MVP discussion and the leader of a title contender. So it starts with that. But I think, also late in the season, you mentioned Bay's shooting was maybe disappointing. He wound up, I think, around 35% though, on very high volume and as a second year player. And I think fatigue got the best of him down the stretch. His shooting dipped and late in the season, and he played all 82 games. That was a point of pride with him. Played heavy minutes this year. Didn't have, it was already a condensed off season because of the late start to the previous season, and then he had his USA basketball thing wedged in between that. I think he really needed to kind of catch his breath, and but he didn't want to sit. He wanted to play all 82. He did. Yeah, a lot was placed on him in those minutes, and the shooting suffered a little bit. He was still right at league average from the 3-point line, on despite being the focus of game plans and on very high volume. So I think he's right there with Cade. Isaiah Stewart, I thought in the last 2 months, made tremendous strides, going from a backup as a rookie to a starting center. That's still, I believe, the biggest disparity between the quality of of players at any position in the NBA, starting coming off the benches at center. So he's going against a whole better quality of opponent this year. And, you know, his play improved markedly, even if it's hard to find in the raw stats. I thought he was a much better player over the last few months on both ends, and really started to turn a corner with figuring this game out. So those three guys, I think Isaiah Livers showed he's going to be a player. I think Killian Hayes in the last month of the season, Stein finally maybe started to feel comfortable. He's got to improve as a 3-point shooter to really unlock his game, but there's a lot to like with him, given his size, his defense, his vision and passing ability. So yeah, they got a lot of pieces in place. I think 9 or 10 guys, 23 or younger, and that roster that ended the season, going to be, they'll have some roster stability coming back next year. But, you know, all that said, you look at the East this year, that's the deepest I've ever seen the East. So you can go 500 next year and finish 11th. You know, that's not beyond the pale. So they're definitely on the right track. Now the question is, how do they get to that next step? And do they have I believe the answer is yes on this, but do they have the patience to withstand maybe another year of not reaching prematurely and maybe trying to undo some of the good progress they've made by losing patience and trying to rush the process?
You can't rush the process, Keith. You got to trust the process. He is Keith Langlois. Find him on Twitter, Keith_Langlois. Keith, my friend, thank you so much for taking the time today to chat with us and to remember Bob Lanier, pay a little homage to him, and also talk about this past season, my friend. We greatly appreciate your time today.
Thanks, Anthony. Anytime.